And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Yeah, we're not afraid. We're not afraid as much as they want you to be afraid. I mean, damn, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we just need kind of, you know, is there a solution? What's the problem? Where are we going? So what are we doing today? Today is Day of Rage, Day of Rage, Day of Rage. And we had, in the first hour, Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers on, and he's talking about, you know, you just need to, you know, take care of yourself. We need the local, unorganized militia. We just take care of it ourselves. And, you know, there's a lot of technology out there for that. You know, cell 411, Peacekeeper, that kind of stuff, to where you can just organize your neighbors with send a text. Come save my butt. Somebody's beating the crap out of me. And he's wearing a badge. So this is one of the solutions. In the third hour, next hour, we're going to have Larkin Rose on. He wrote years ago. Go, big controversy, wrote, when to shoot a cop. And it just came down to sometime before the cattle car door closes. It's sometime before that. I don't know when, but it's before. You know, before the handcuffs go on to the, you know, you're just just somebody. You know, and the police state to be a pounding on. Well, leading up to all this, it's always in the threat of some kind of war. There's a war to be had. And there'll be war going on at the Republican and Democratic national conventions. There's a war they're trying to get going with Russia. There's it's just something's going on. We're up against something. There's a change in something, and it's because the economy is going. Whatever they've done and milked the planet of resources, everybody's whatever, it's coming to an end. And when that happens and the central banking of the plan of we rule you is gone, then what? Well, it's building up to it's going to be wars and rumors of wars. Well, that's why we're talking to Scott Horton, because he's going to help us out with it. Scott Horton, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm, relatively in comparison to most and, with everything going on, doing them pretty good. You know, because
a couple of weeks, isn't it?
It hasn't been like a big giant surprise for us. The thing is that we learned in France when they had the truck going through all these people watching fireworks near the water there, that they've been under 8-month police state emergency kind of thing already. And then they amp it up. I mean, when you're at red alert, what do you go to? Red, you know, or red plus
crimson.
Or something? Yeah. Yeah.
Fight or flight for so long in a row, right?
Well, they're not really. I think there's going to be a clamoring. There was an article right after the last Paris shootings and so on, the terrorist attacks there, that a gentleman, Alessandro Fusillo, we had his a lawyer from Italy with offices in Berlin and Madrid and Rome, and he wrote, look, we need that some kind of a Second Amendment, the ability to defend ourselves here in Europe. Like America, if this would have happened, I just visited Arizona, and the guy wouldn't have finished out his first half of the first magazine, I mean, before it would be returned fire. So I'm what's the flavor? Are they this warring with Russia and so on? Is that kind of part of this backdrop of China, of Taiwan? We're being dialed up into something coming. Something wicked this way comes. What and by whom? Help me out, Scott. Scott?
Oh, sorry. Mic was off. I'm not so sure how to tie it into Russia and China other than, you know, America has a policy of full spectrum dominance. That's what they call it. Global hegemony. No near peer competitors allowed. And Russia and China, of course, are the last two most powerful independent countries on Earth from our empire. Europe, almost virtually all of Europe, those countries are satellites in our military empire as far as that goes. So, you know, why do we have a war in Syria? Why has the U.S. been backing jihadist terrorists in Syria since 2011? Even while we bomb some, we're backing others. It's because we're trying to overthrow Assad in order to, well, not really anymore. I don't guess they are. Well, it depends on who's they. But the policy has been to at least weaken, if not overthrow Assad, in order to check Iran and Russia. And so, you know, that's kind of the broader context of the war that's going on here. You know, as far as, you know, Syria, I mean, my guess is, you know, the Syria war blowing back here into France. I mean, it was a Tunisian attacker last night. No word yet. Well, apparently they're saying that he was just a petty criminal and maybe he hadn't gone to Syria to fight. I don't know. But the context is still a terror war that has raged on for 15 years now. You know, we didn't have to invade Iraq. We sure as hell didn't. Well, same, just the same in Libya and in this covert action against Assad in Syria. If they hadn't done any of these things, I mean, if Harry Brown had been the president, Ernie, in the year 2000, the war on terrorism would have been over by Christmas 2001. That's it. Even assuming the 9/11 attack had happened, he would have sent special forces, not against the Taliban, just against Al-Qaeda and, well, anyone in the way. And then he would have called the whole thing off. And that would have been it. And instead, what America has done is gone over and just knocked over country after country after country and creating not just, you know, power vacuums, but, you know, violent, you know, blood-soaked, burning power vacuums of civil war and destabilization in every way possible. And so, you know, in other words, if their only plot was to try to grow bin Ladenism in the world, they've done it perfectly. This is exactly what they've done is, you know, spread that kind of ideology and those politics. And so it's going to keep blowing back against us. I don't think that everything that happens has to be looked at as part of some plan for moving us towards some closer goal in the sense of some grand design or very deliberate strategy. I mean, on one level, yeah, you do have people like Zbigniew Brzezinski saying, yes, we must dominate the center of Eurasia forever and all that. That's our military policy. But every event in the world that takes place that can be considered chaotic is a part of that plan? Nah. I mean, possibly, more likely than not, in the sense of part of the consequences of it, right? Like when George Bush invaded Iraq and stayed for 8 years to fight a civil war on the side of the Shia. Do you think anybody on the National Security Council really talked about how, wow, if we fight a whole war of sectarian cleansing and kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad and give Baghdad to the Shiites from now on, I wonder if that's going to cause decades and decades worth of reverberating consequences back and forth and around the region and in all the national capitals. And I wonder if that's going to destabilize and shake alliances and create new ones. And no, they're thinking, yeah, we're real smart. Watch what we're doing. We're building a democracy. We're creating hegemony. And they always think they're right. And they always think it'll be easy. But it never is. And so, you know, if you want to be a pessimist about this stuff, I think that's really the best position to take is look at what they're doing and then just try to guess how bad the consequences are going to be. You'll be pretty much right. And that's all I do. What I've been saying is going to happen.
You know, when we come back, we'll go, you know, step by step on some of the things that are happening now with Russia and China and the Middle East and the terrorism and, and the conventions. Yeah, I'm looking at the map here, and it one thing that kind of strikes me is Iran is borders Iraq, then Turkey, and it's really close to Russia, but between them, Azerbaijan and Armenia. So, and Georgia, of course. So I'm looking at Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Georgia. Where are they in all of this?
Well, let's see. I believe that the Azerbaijanis are closer. Oh, man, now I'm trying to remember. There's a war that just broke out in Nagorno-Karabakh back a couple of months ago. And if I remember it right, America is on the side of the Azerbaijanis, and the Russians are more on the side of the Armenians. Although I think the Russians have pretty good relations with both. But I think the Americans have been, you know, wanting to break Azerbaijan away from the Russians because of that Caspian Sea oil. They want, you know, that the BTC pipeline. It goes from Baku, which is in Azerbaijan, on the coast of the
Caspian Sea.
Caspian. Did I say Black Sea? I meant Caspian. On the coast of the Caspian Sea there. And then it runs from there through Georgia and then into Turkey. And then...
Okay, so there are financial interests that want to have a pipeline from the Caspian Sea through Azerbaijan, Georgia, to make it into Turkey, which means Europe. So that's kind of a bypass of money going into Russia. So it's economic and, you know, whatever war. Because when you're talking about there's a dust-up of something on the border, you said it's on the border with Armenia and Azerbaijan?
Well, here's the deal. Both are... Okay, remember how West Berlin was wholly surrounded by East Germany?
Uh-huh.
It was a Western... Basically, a different country's city inside a different country. Well, Azerbaijan and Armenia both have that. There's a region called Nagorno-Karabakh in Armenia that is settled by and controlled by Azerbaijanis. But there's also... Or wait, is it the other way around? And then, but they also have it the other way around, where the Azerbaijanis have a territory that's wholly surrounded within Armenia as well. And so you'd think that they would just make a damn easement, right? Make a highway and figure out a way to connect everybody. But it remains a problem. And they had some real killing was going on there in April in some fighting here. Yeah, so... Nagorno-Karabakh is in Azerbaijan. It's Armenian territory inside Azerbaijan. And then I forget the name of the Azerbaijani territory.
So it serves the interest of somebody to keep this animosity and tension up. There's something going. Because I can see geographic...
It's a national tension. I think the outside powers are trying to tamp it down, honestly.
Really?
And keep it from getting out of control.
Well, I'm just looking at this. I can see the benefit of having Azerbaijan and Armenia not stable. I mean, Georgia sure as hell wasn't. So, you know, because you're going Iran.
You know, I'm reading right now a piece by Jason Ditz at antiwar.com about it.
I'll let you read it for another 20 seconds. We come back, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 641-552-5046. That's 641-552-5046.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hanlon.
And we're right back with Scott Horton. What I want to do is I'm looking at the just a world map of Middle East and Europe. And if you look at the map, all of a sudden, a lot of things start to make more sense. So why are we here, there, everywhere, or something? And you see the march... You know, across northern Africa, the Mediterranean coast, of course. You got oil in the Caspian Sea. You have Iran, you know, and Russia are the main targets in that whole region. Then for Asia, it's China. And I'm looking, man, for us to take on the empire, to take on Russia and China is just like, wow, why? Because there's some guys in suits somewhere or uniforms thinking we can and should for whatever reason. But I'm looking at Iran. North Iran, it has, on the northern border, has a Caspian Sea. Now, there's a lot of oil wells and so on in the Caspian Sea. On the west of Iran, it borders Iraq and Turkey. Now, there, it's really close to, it's less than 100 miles or so or something from, you know, Iran to Russia. But between them, on the coast of the Caspian Sea is Azerbaijan. Then it goes west of that is Armenia, then Georgia. Now, you go Azerbaijan, Armenia, Turkey. If you can get a pipeline and you get the oil from the Caspian Sea and you can run it from Azerbaijan, Georgia, Turkey, your Europe, and that shuts off a big giant chunk of money-making oil running with from Russia. So it's I can see if I'm looking at the big giant world, I want to rule board of where's the energy and so on, I'm looking at Azerbaijan and Armenia need to be in flux. I think we're going to start hearing a lot about Azerbaijan and Armenia. What do you think, Scott?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, I kind of was stumbling all over myself trying to explain a little bit of this during the break there. So sorry for the people listening to the whole show archive later. You know, it is absolutely a tough situation. I mean, clearly the oil pipelines play a big part in this because the Americans want to prevent Europe from being dependent on Russia for their hydrocarbons. And so anything that the Americans can do to find other ways of supplying Europe in a way that doesn't make them dependent on or lessens their dependence on Russia is so much the better from the American point of view. And then, yeah, it's called the pipeline from hell. I don't even know exactly where they are on this thing. For all I know, the project's been canceled. Honestly, I haven't kept up with it over the last couple of years, but the BTC pipeline was to go from the coast of the Caspian Sea, or maybe beneath the Caspian Sea in Azerbaijan, through Armenia and into Turkey, and then port at the Mediterranean. And you know, to cut out the Russians, basically, to take that Caspian oil. And so, you know, all those politics are very heavily dependent on outside powers pushing their weight around. Now, as far as, you know, to zoom in a bit, in the conflict between Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh, Armenia and Azerbaijan, there's this, basically a county, I guess, in Azerbaijan, a state, a district in Azerbaijan, that is settled by and ruled by Armenia. That's wholly inside the neighboring country. And I always forget the name of the other one, but Azerbaijan actually has a separate territory that's wholly surrounded by Armenia as well. And, you know, they really should just build a bunch of roads and easements and figure out a way to share this, the territory. So it's not a problem here, but occasionally they fight about it. And, you know, you were guessing right and I was guessing wrong about what's going on there. To quote Jason Ditz, the great Jason Ditz from news.antiwar.com, who's on it all day, every day, on every issue in the world. He wrote in April, the recent flare-up came in the wake of Azeri President Aliyev's visit to the United States. Secretary of State John Kerry met with him and then called for an ultimate resolution of the Nagorno-Karabakh dispute. Though Kerry insisted he wanted a diplomatic solution, within 48 hours, fighting was raging. So whether Kerry actually gave the guy a green light to start a shooting conflict, or whether he was misunderstood, it looks like, which is quite possible, looks like, you know, America did help spur this latest bit of conflict there. And it is quite possible he was misunderstood, that the guy took that as diplomatic language, meaning go ahead and start a war. Maybe something was lost in translation there.
Well, this is what happened.
They did give the green light. I don't know.
Well, this is what happened with Kuwait. You know, it's the same kind of thing. And, you know, they just, we don't have an opinion, we don't care, and peace out, or we encourage you, or here's a billion, go bomb them. I mean, you know, whatever deal is struck or made, it's kind of like, you're going, they're gangs with flags. I mean, all these countries are just gangs with flags. So it's just like you got, you know, the Gambizzo family, you know, going to the Don and saying, hey, You know, I want to off this guy. You know, he's a muscling in on, I need your permission to off this guy. Okay, off this guy, eh? And he goes, eh, off the guy. So that's, and they go off and off him. And I'm just like, it seems like the same thing at the State Department level. You know, you got to go get permission. What's going to happen? And there may be ulterior motives for you doing it. But I, as I'm looking at the map, I bet you we're going to be hearing a lot of Azerbaijan-Armenia stuff. It just seems like the next domino.
Yeah, well, pray for stability, man. I don't know what to say.
Well, you know, we have...
It certainly could be worse.
Well, you have, you know, different platforms, and they're arguing over the little, you know, lines of and commas and stuff in the Democrat and Republican platforms. And it kind of bring a lot of this stuff up. I don't know how important that is or anybody cares. But what are we looking at in the conventions coming up here? Is there, you know, war going to be an issue, I would imagine?
Well, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen outside the Republican convention. But the Rules Committee made sure to kill off the Never Trump movement. They were proposing rule changes that would allow delegates to vote their conscience on their first on the first ballot. Which would mean that he could stand a chance of losing. And then on the second ballot, they would be unbound and could vote for whoever. And they could do a Romney coup or whatever they wanted. But that's been officially killed off now. All the delegates will be bound to vote for, well, the ones, and he's already won them from the primary states where he's won enough. They'll be bound to vote for him. So he'll have the nomination. That was your best chance for a fist fight right there, was Bill Kristol and them trying to pull something and nominate a Romney and steal it from Trump. I think they backed down because I think they realized that the Trump fans are working class guys with upper body strength as opposed to the neocons. and I think they didn't really want to get in that fist fight because they weren't going to win it. But on the outside at the convention, which all different factions are going to protest and to what ends? I mean, place your bets now. But yeah, there's going to be a police riot, whether any protesters, quote unquote, provoke it or deserve it or not.
Well, there was one thing I saw that the people that were pro-Trump that wanted to, you know, we're not going to let you get away with screwing us kind of thing, that they were not allowed or given a permit to protest, but every left wing, whatever the hell was. And I'm going, what was up with that? There's weird stuff going on. This is being manipulated at the highest level. There's just something. Well, Scott Horton and a great guest that he has talking about it is going to help us muddle through this. We'll focus more on the conventions coming up because it's timely. Yeah, and, you know, the conventions and what's going on and VP picks and who and what and Benghazi and emails and not being charged and Clinton meeting with Lynch and doing, I'm just, all this stuff is just, damn. And I'm sorry?
Clinton years, man. Doesn't it feel like Clinton years?
I know, it's that, blue dress all over.
You know, like the
over.
Thing on the tarmac and all that? I mean...
I'm wondering how Lynch would perceive that, or if she even knew he was coming, or she did and met him there and then kind of feigned, you know, I didn't know. And, you know, then some local reporter. And then, you know, who
I think he really put her on the spot. I mean, I don't know for sure. Maybe they had scheduled it or something, but I think he really put her on the spot and she made a bad choice to let him on. She should have just said to her staff, tell him I can't. And don't tell him why, but just say, I'm busy as hell doing something even more important than meet with him. Bye.
No, it would be inappropriate. Don't get your... I mean, yeah, when you got the former President Clinton wants to walk on your plane, I mean, what would happen if
you
don't?
And they actually put it in the New York Times. I couldn't believe this, seriously, that they put it in the New York Times that, yeah, the Clinton administration is thinking very seriously about keeping Lynch on as Attorney General. I mean, are you kidding me? And that was in... That was 2 days. That was on the Saturday before the Monday announcement by Comey that they're not going to indict, you know, or that he doesn't recommend indicting.
They're not even pretending anymore.
It's pretty overt. Pretty overt. To put that in the New York Times, I mean.
Yeah, we're not even going to pretend
anymore. Hey,
listen,
as long as we got a minute here before it's the actual show again.
Yeah, we got 2 minutes.
Let me just complain real quick about the Islam thing. every time there's a terrorist attack like this, Ernie, I get so demoralized because, well, Twitter, a.k.a. stupid, thinks that every time something happens, that it's just proof. It's the biggest non sequitur argument in the world. Anytime a Muslim does anything, it's proof that it's Islam that made him do it. It doesn't matter whether there's any kind of correlation or whatever, right? He could have just said, you know, a guy in Nike sneakers attacks again. It's something about those Nikes that makes people kill innocent people or whatever. And every time it happens, it's like history just began, and it's just proof somehow that Islam itself makes people do these things. And yet, of course, the headline comes out this morning that this guy, according to his neighbors, the niece attacker, was, quote, more into women than religion. And he did what he did for political reasons.
Which was what?
Not for religious ones. Not so he could go to heaven with virgins forever. Not because Islam says kill people.
Well, what was his reasoning?
Well, we don't know specifically yet, but guaranteed it has something to do with America and France bombing Arabs and Muslims to death for the last at least 2.5 years.
Yeah, but usually it's a Muslim that doesn't like that.
Well, sure, but what's the point there? That the religion says kill innocent people for being innocent, or that they have a sense of shared identity with the people who are being killed, and so they...
Yeah, that was one thing that...
That's not religion. That's the same thing as boys from Phoenix, Arizona, signing up for the U.S. Marine Corps to go get revenge for the attack in New York, Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C.
Okay, see, that's something that you need to bring up. In the first hour, Stuart Rhodes is really making a big deal that there is, you know, this is Islamic...
That's
thing.
Bullshit. Stuart Rhodes is an idiot.
All right, well, you know, say it on air. Here we go.
LRN.FM. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Scott Horton and I are just yakking. Well, since he said it off air, let's see if he said it on air, because, you know, we got to say it. The question is this an Islamic religion thing? Is this a, you know, a side effect of a religion that wants some kind of, or is that the excuse? Is that what's being used? Is it to, you know, create an enemy here so that we can get more fascist police state of war and, you know, have an enemy of what they're building it up, and that, you know, black people did it, Muslims did it. No, black lives matter, Muslims lives matter. Everybody, you know, we're segmented out and we got to have a war and police state. I mean, I would think at the Republican and Democratic National Conventions, there's opportunity to make a point. And if somebody wants to create something, that'd be a good time to do it. I mean, they're going to do something, you know, and I'm just, who, what's going on? Is it a religion thing when the guy goes plowing through a bunch of people in a truck? Is he Muslim? Is it because of Muslim? Is it an ISIS thing? Yeah, I'm doing ISIS. Yeah, whatever, ISIS. You know, I'm just wondering what's really going on. Well, when Stuart Rhodes makes the comment that, you know, we really got to pay attention to this Islamo whatever thing, Scott Horton says what?
It's total nonsense. And, you know, I shouldn't have done the personal attack because I actually don't know that much about that guy. I met him one time at a thing in Florida for about a minute, and I really don't know much about Stuart Rhodes. But that particular assertion that the entire American right has convinced themselves is just a nice stand-in for this is all America's fault, and especially the American right, who love to cheer for wars and particularly against Muslims. But let's just look at the chronology here, okay? Ronald Reagan, well, Jimmy Carter before him, and then Ronald Reagan were best friends with the Mujahideen, loved them. met with them in the Oval Office. Now, if Islam mandated a war against everyone who's white and Christian and lives in the middle part of North America because of how innocent and wonderful and free we are, then how come Ronald Reagan never had a problem? How come Ronald Reagan said, yeah, what we'll do is we'll work with the Saudis and the Pakistanis and we'll spend millions and millions of dollars, billions, to support these guys in their war against the atheist, communist Soviets in Afghanistan in the 1980s? Right when you were already an adult, Ernie. Right when I was a kid.
No, I remember,
but not that long ago. Okay, I'm not that old yet. That was not that long ago. Islam's been around a long time, and yet somehow they were not our implacable enemy until guess what happened? George H.W. Bush occupied Saudi Arabia in order to attack Iraq, and then. Finish the sentence with me, everybody. Stay there forever. And Bill Clinton stayed there. And Bill Clinton blockaded and starved a million people to death. To death. Starved them to death. And guess what? That made people mad. They didn't need to look in their holy book to say, hey, out of work jihadi fighter who's looking to make some money killing somebody, you know, you should attack North Americans for being innocent all day. They had enemies. George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton made the American people the enemy of Ronald Reagan's sock puppet terrorists. Get it? Is that really so difficult to understand? And then when they attacked the United States on September 11th, really all through the 1990s, and culminating in the 9/11 attack here, then George Bush used that as an excuse to start even more wars. Not just to go to Afghanistan and or Pakistan, but Yemen, Somalia, Iraq. And he completely obliterated Iraqi civilization. Completely obliterated it. Created 5 million refugees. A million rotting corpses. Millions more widows and orphans. Every single ethnic and religious minority completely wiped off the map. Dead now in a Syrian refugee camp. But then, oh yeah, you know why there's violence over there? It's because they believe in Islam. Come on, man. America is blowing them up to death. Look, as I said in the break, American boys to this day, boys from Phoenix, Arizona to this day, join the Army and Marine Corps because of the 9/11 attack on New York, Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C. 15 years ago. But we're just supposed to believe that when America just nonstop sets off high explosives from as Thomas Friedman put it, from Baghdad to Basra, and for that matter, to Kabul, to Kandahar, to Kismayo, to Libya, to Damascus, and everywhere in between. We're supposed to believe that them damn dirty Arab Muslims, they don't mind that. They're not mad at you because you exploded their child to death in tiny little fragments they couldn't even find to bury. No, they're mad because their stupid, backwards, blasphemous religion makes them hate innocence. And then, as soon as there's another attack, you're supposed to somehow be reinforced in this idiotic belief. Instead of going, wow, I wonder if this has anything to do with France helping America support the jihadists in Syria for 3 years, three years leading up to the rise of the Islamic State, and then helping America turn around and betray and backstab and bomb the Islamic State after that. Gee, I guess this proves that Chalmers Johnson was right about blowback. For some reason, they don't ever say that. Even though we know France existed and had a foreign policy the last 5 years, don't we, everybody? But no, oh my God, something happened in France. So guess what? Yesterday never happened. Once the sun went down. But before that, never existed. And it must be Islam because I'm just fresh out of ideas. What else could it possibly be? Could it actually be French mirages, flying sorties, dropping high explosives on people? This is a war. This is like saying the Germans fight us at the Battle of the Bulge. because of their dedication to Nazism, as opposed to they're in the German army and they're, yeah, the Nazis got them into a war, but they're defending their country from invasion, right? I mean, did the Japanese have imperial interests, or it was just Shinto extremism gone out of control? Those crazy Shintoists and Buddhists, you just can't stop them from killing civilians because they believe in Buddhism so badly. Radical fundamentalist Buddhism caused the rape of Nanking. Isn't that stupid? Doesn't that sound stupid? But every single time there's an attack, I guess it is Islam after all. Because or else, what am I going to do? Stop and think about it for 45 seconds?
And the problem really being, what, just being bombed, being over there, just our military empire industrial complex of kick
think
your butt.
Think about how upset people were when 3,000 died here. 3,000. Well, there have been 3,000 killed a month, more or less, in Iraq ever since the invasion. I mean, well, in the worst years. But anyway, you could, more or less, you could call it a September 11th every couple of months or so, at least, in terms of the trauma to their society. Just in the last weeks, the truck bombs, the ISIS truck bombs going off in Shiite districts in Baghdad.
Okay, in the POTUS race that we got coming up, that's one thing we can do for the next segment. The solution, or solution offered by anybody, is what? It's build a wall? I mean, I'm wondering...
Keep killing them. No, that's all anybody says. We got to bomb them more. We got to invade more. Because the alternative is admitting that this is all Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton's fault. Right? But meanwhile, how hard is that? And in fact, how do you like it that Donald Trump, of all people, is the one who comes closest to ever telling this truth? And he says, you know what? We should have never even gone over there at all. If we'd had no foreign policy at all in the last 20 years, we'd be better off, he said. He said Iraq, Libya, Syria led right to the refugee crisis and the terrorism crisis. It's Hillary's fault. He's 100% right about that.
You know, when this campaign gets through the convention, there's going to be, the gloves are coming off. It'll be interesting.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Thursday, gold is $20 lower at $1,323 per ounce. Silver is 20 cents lower at $20.20 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $660. Looks like today presents another opportunity to buy on the dips. To order or for more information, give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
An opinion from Mr. Scott Horton, anti-war radio individual. Okay, one thing that we're looking at is, of all the problems, there's always going to be somebody that's going to try and take advantage of this situation. Well, of course, you know it's going to happen in politics. It's going to be the Democratic and Republican National Conventions coming up, and that with. When is that, Scott? I mean, it's like this weekend or next weekend or something. I don't pay attention. Well, who's meeting, doing what?
I'm sorry, what?
When's the conventions? You got the Republican?
Well, the Republican one starts next week.
Okay, next week being...
This weekend, I think.
This weekend.
This weekend, or Monday, I don't know.
And then the Democratic is the following weekend?
I really don't know, man.
Yeah, me neither. I really don't care either.
I mean, I am looking forward to the bigger, worse fight post convention. But
well, what's going to happen? You know, this guy that Trump says that he's going to pick as his VP. We know anything about him?
Well, I mean, they're saying it's going to be Mike Pence. Who's just a typical establishment Republican. He was the co-sponsor of the Iraq War and invasion resolution, and was a horrible defender of the Iraq War for years there. You might remember when some dumbass congressman was claiming that going and walking through the marketplace in Iraq was just the same as going to the farmer's market on a Saturday afternoon in Indiana. That was him. And which it was a market in Iraq where 88 people had died in a suicide bombing like 2 weeks before or something like that. But anyway, so yeah, he's just basically a hack, a Bush, you know, stand in or whatever up there, which is probably a smart move. I mean, Newt Gingrich is lobbying so hard for the VP slot, but he's a big fat slob and everybody hates his fat, ugly face and his condescending tone of voice. And people have always hated Newt Gingrich. The only people who ever liked him was in his own House district. He was able to get reelected there. But remember, he resigned in disgrace after he took on Hillary's husband and lost. So how in the hell Trump was supposed to think he would be the best guy to bring on for VP? I mean, if Trump was the president, Gingrich would probably make a pretty effective chief of staff or something like that as far as being a real politico and able to get things done in D.C. But for and same thing for Christie. A big fat slob thinks he can have the... And no offense to the big fat slobs out there, but you're not running for vice president either. You got to look good on TV to run for, you know, Mr. America or Miss America, you know, TV show contest up there is what this is, you know?
Well, you have Christie. He could easily be chief of staff or even Supreme Court or AG.
God help us, attorney general.
I know.
Former federal prosecutor.
The war on drugs will get amped up. But that's another thing. I don't know if Trump is really going to embrace this war on drugs thing. He's going to change a lot of stuff, or is he? I mean,
don't expect anything good out of him, especially on stuff like that.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, I'm really torn because I think of it like I think Donald Trump is going to be an absolute nightmare when it comes to domestic policy, especially when it comes to persecuting Mexicans and Muslims. It's going to just be completely freaking out of control. On the other hand, and I really mean this seriously, I think that Hillary Clinton is more likely to actually get us into a war with Russia that could lead to the at least threatened extinction of humankind and most of the life on this planet.
I think she's cool with that depiction. I get the impression that Hillary is like, damn straight, I kick Russia's ass, you know? Yeah, right. vote for me.
To impress whoever she's talking to in the room. That's the thing that strikes me after all these years of being exposed to her. That's the thing that gets me about it, is it seems to me like the social psychology with her is stronger than anything else. And that the approval of the men in the room is what she seeks so badly. And that, you know, like she went to General Jack Keane, who's, you know, out there far to the right out there with McCain and the neocons and promoting endless surges and escalations in all these wars. And in the New York Times, they tell the story of when she went to meet with him and she kicks off her shoes and puts her feet up on his desk and says, where's a gal? Get a cold beer around here, General. And all this kind of thing. For her, it just paints such a, I think, very telling picture of how Jack Keane patting her on the head and approving of her basically would be the most important thing for her to consider when she makes decisions like this. And here's my anecdote to really drive the point home. There was a piece in The Intercept last week about General Breedlove. Yeah, that's really his name. General Breedlove, who until only very recently was the supreme allied commander of NATO, an American Air Force general. And somebody hacked his Gmail account and posted them all on the internet. And what had happened was he was using his Gmail to email Colin Powell and Wesley Clark, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO and Army General, or was he Air Force? Yeah, Army General. And different professors and different people. And what he was doing was he was trying to come up with an end run around President Obama. He was trying to figure out a way to, first of all, pressure Obama to get him to approve of transferring weapons, not just non-lethal equipment, but actual weapons to the Ukrainian government in the middle of their war with Russian proxy forces and rebels in eastern Ukraine in the war in 2014. And was telling in 15. And at one point, one of these advisors, I forget if it was Powell or one of the professors, says to him, well, given the president's orders to you to not start a war, I think that puts you in a pretty tough position there. Which, I mean, this is a real conversation taking place. If someone is actually telling this general, like, hey, you know, he's the president, not you, and he told you not to start a war, so maybe you should back down and shut up. Okay? Now, pretend this wasn't Obama in there, but it was Hillary Clinton. And General Breedlove is saying, oh, we gotta escalate. Strobe Talbot and all of his guys are saying, we gotta escalate. We gotta make the Russians pay. We gotta make them feel pain. We gotta increase the cost of their intervention in Ukraine. Now, you and me hear this and we go, yeah, whoa, and then what? Holy crap! But they hear that she hears this, and what she hears is, and if I don't, you won't like me. And so now imagine Hillary Clinton instead of Barack Obama in the chair. She would have done it. She would have done whatever the hawks said. It took Obama's cowardice, reluctance, hesitation, and strength of his cowardice to say, no, I'm not crossing this line. Another example is, again, Russia, George W. Bush. Dick Cheney wanted to attack Russian forces as they invaded South Ossetia to drive the Georgian attack out in 2008 when Georgia, our ally, attacked South Ossetia and Russian troops in South Ossetia. And according to the anecdotes, which this was confirmed and reported in a couple of different places, Dick Cheney was like, yeah, we got to hit the Russians as they're coming through the tunnels under the Caucasus Mountains. And Bush said to the National Security Council staff, who here agrees with Vice we ought to hit the Russians? And nobody raised their hand. And Bush said, all right, thanks, Dick. Next order of business. And moved on. Because at some point, even the calm, patient wisdom of George W. Bush knows better than to escalate a conflict with Russia to actual arms like that. But I actually don't have as much confidence in Hillary Clinton. Because I think ultimately, with her, the peer pressure is what matters the most, and by far. And you know, so in other words, the best hope we would have, Ernie, would be that Bill would talk her down. But Bill's the one who expanded NATO in the first place. Bill's the one who got us into this mess.
How does it end?
And he's got real heart problems. He had a quadruple bypass or something, so he might not live 8 years to be her calm, patient George W. Bush advisor.
So how does this end? I mean, what are we looking at? You know, we're going to have a mushroom cloud. What are we going to have? A mushroom cloud? Are we going to get in the war? Are we, you know, is it the convention's going to bring out peace and prosperity and stability, and the American people say that we're not going to have a war, and where's the anti-war candidate? What about Johnson Weld thing? I mean, you know, is there any hope? I mean, what would you have to go through to get onto the other side?
Yeah, man, you know, I wish I had a good answer to this question, Ernie.
I don't know either.
What we need is Ron Paul. And even Ron at his best, you and I know what he's trying to say, and we go, yeah! But he, even at his best, what was so...
Ian Freeman, host of Free Talk.
What was charismatic about him was that he was not charismatic, in a sense. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He is a very, very nice and genuine person.
He's a sincere guy. He wasn't rock star enough. And I go, I don't know. You would think he was. You ever went to one of his freaking rallies?
No, but it's all I'm saying is, and this isn't even a criticism of him, right? I mean, he's my greatest, he's the greatest American hero ever, and certainly mine. But it's just one of his qualities is not, and again, for the good, probably, but he's not the kind of guy who gets up there and tells you, this is what you need to believe. No, that's wrong. This is what's right. He's too nice. He's too nice to say, no, Giuliani, you take it back, fool. You know, let me tell you about the Bushes, everybody, and what they've done to us. You know, this kind of thing, fighting words. He doesn't lead in that way. He leads by saying, young man, read Mises, and you will understand that freedom is what works best for, you know, he's great, but he's just, and he leads by example. He shows like, no, Giuliani, I will not back down. I will
prefer that kind of statesmanship over the bullshit, you know.
But I'm just saying, if we had Ron now, and he was a little more eloquent and a little more willing to tangle with these guys. And this is sort of what we talked about with Rand.
Right.
This
you had Trump up against Ron Paul, what would happen? With the Rand tried to attack him. That's
Rand,
not going to work.
What if Rand had Ron's philosophy and principles, but Rand's willingness to go ahead and tangle with McCain a little bit, right? I mean, you don't have to be Donald Trump, the sleazebag who just attacks everybody in the worst way. But that was, to me, that was the promise of Rand, that Rand would be a little bit better spoken and a little bit more willing to fight Ron.
Nah, see, I but like instead, Ron's
just
went method
the other way entirely, and Rand is Jeb.
I was not a Rand fan ever, but I liked Ron's demeanor. I liked that he did it. That a lot of people complain. He's getting across. He let the people carry the water. He represented. He did it, and the people did it. The people.
You have to admit, though, that there were times where he stuttered. So I mean, and I'm one to talk this morning for sure. There are times where he stutters and stumbles so much that, you know, the news reporter lady asking the question doesn't really understand. You know, or like he goes back to kind of a talking point and a thing he always says. Because after all, he said the same thing 10 million times, so it's hard to construct a brand new sentence about it, you know, whatever. But sometimes he comes off in such shorthand that you and me, we know what he's saying. We write the rest of the sentence ourselves and fill in the gaps. And I think people mostly could understand what he meant, but you got to admit that he makes his audience work a little bit to figure out exactly what he's trying to say sometimes.
But and the people
I
took it up.
I don't mean this as a criticism of him. I'm just saying in terms of the question you asked in the broader scope of like, so here we are stuck between a Trump and a Hillary. And what do we have? And I'm saying, we got nothing. What we need is him. But even him at his best wouldn't cut it right now. What we would need is him at my fantasy of his best. Really be able to stop this stuff.
Well, it's not going to go until it breaks. And they're just hoping to pick up the pieces to do what they want to do to bring about whatever the hell it is. And there's a leaking out of the philosophy in opposition to what they want. And it's I don't know how it's going to turn out. Even if the bad guys win and get more hegemonic control of We Rule You, it's just Darth Vader squeezing his fist and watching the star systems leak out. I mean, it's just I don't see the win in this for anybody. I'm just trying to see what's
you
going
know
to be
what
after.
Is, man, you're a libertarian. It's all public choice theory, right? Yeah. So your mistake is always you think of it like, well, if I was a senator and I was trying to do what was right for America, but that's not how it works, right? For a senator, what they do is what's good for them. And for a general or an admiral, they do what's good for them. And for a CIA officer, he does what's good for them because they're individuals and they act for their own best interests. And so it's, I mean, you really need to start thinking of this stuff at least sometimes, try on for a point of view. The idea that this is coming from no grand strategy at all, that this is nothing
well,
but a
it's public they've spent a shitload of money and effort on trying to get public opinion to support whatever the hell it is. So
well, yeah,
I'm
but
just,
I mean, only in a way where it's as transparent as could be. Hey, hate and fear Muslims so that we can have wars against Muslims. Hate and fear Russia so we can have hopefully just a cold war against Russia.
And that manifests into a whole bunch of crap.
Money on big ticket items, and so that we can get shiny medals for our shirts, and so that we can sell more soap on our TV ads. And you know how it works, man.
Yeah, no, I gotta get the Larkin now. I'm coming in, but we're gonna have you on next week too.
Sure.
All right, we'll do it. All right, man. All right, talk to you later.
All right, see you.
Peace.